What's up, everybody? This is Jason Diakite of This Moment, your transatlantic bridge connecting Sweden, Stockholm to Harlem, New York, and in turn connecting us all to the world. As 2021 comes to a close, Marcus and I have decided to just reflect back on some of our favorite moments during the podcast this year, the second year we've been in existence. We've had the chance to speak with a lot of wonderful guests, cover important topics that impact our global BIPOC community. Thank you for being part of the journey with us, and I'd just like to share some of my faves with you. So let's jump in.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Since the start of the pandemic, data shows that there's been a drastic uptick in anti-Asian attacks in the United States, especially against women. Many feel, and rightfully so, that the 45th president played a huge role in this by calling COVID-19 the Chinese virus. So earlier this year, I got a chance to chat with my dear friend and activist and academic, Trisha Wong, about what it's like being an Asian woman living in the United States during this time. So let's hear some of that episode.
Trisha, you know, for you personally, what have these past 12 months been like?
Look, my past 12 months have been very sheltered. You know, I have been working from home. I'm not an essential worker. So I'm mainly in my apartment. So I'm not having to risk my life out there every day and getting to get sick, you know, to work and having to travel on the subway. So my life is limited in that way. But also I live in an incredibly diverse neighborhood. I don't live in a concentrated neighborhood of, like, you know, primarily Asians. I think in our community, at least in Brooklyn, this is a very diverse and strong community. And I feel very safe in this area. You know, it's been, but what I have been fearful of is for, like, my family who lives in Oakland and my grandmother, who I say she can't go on walks alone anymore. She's 92 years old and she used to walk, you know, a couple miles a day on her own. Mm. And I'm like, well, that's not happening.
No.
Trying to convince, you know, my mother just to, like, you know, just to be more careful. But it's been a hard one because I also am trying to work on my family to make sure that it doesn't go in the area of misinfo. Or fall into any of racism, because, you know, a lot of what's happened in Oakland has all the victims are Asians in Chinatown, and it just so happens the community next to Chinatown is a Black community, and a lot of the people who have been, you know, harassing or harming Asian people have been Black in that area, and I just have to really work on my family to make sure that whatever they say, whatever happens, that they don't fall into or lean into any of the racist kind of misinfo that's in fake news that's spreading in, like, you know, their chat groups. I have to be like, no, these are the incidents, and this is not that all Black people are like this. And that's what I work on, like, on a very personal level.
A pillar of white supremacist oppressive tactics is divide and conquer. Always has been.
Exactly.
It's a, you know, colonial.
Exactly.
It's a pillar of colonial strategizing to oppress and conquer nations and peoples. The divisiveness between minority groups in the United States has such an old history. You know, it was, they the Irish were pitted against the Italians, the Irish and the Italians against the blacks or against the Jewish community or against the Asian community. It seemed to me again, that this is just a continuation of like a very kind of American story.
Yeah. And I would say that they're victims of not only white supremacy, but white supremacy is caught up is truly, I think, it's hard to disentangle white supremacy from capitalism at all costs. You know, I think that's why like looking at intersectionality is very important, which is that none of these issues are just that white supremacy and capitalism are caught up together because it's an investment in a system. It's totalizing, you know? And so what happened there is a ongoing issue with that in America, at least with Asians, is that we are pitted against each other by propped up as the model minority, and white people analyze and say, hey, these are the minority, like, why are you black people, Latinos, why can't you be hardworking like Asians? And that is a really problematic myth, because then it creates this divisive, it creates further divides in the community. And also there are policies that are set in place that make it easier for Asians to get loans, you know, where the black people can't have access to. And they've been here. They've been born here. And so the tensions are real, but you can't, it's not, you have to look at it in terms of also capitalism and how it's all tied together. It's part of a long system. And that's why in America, we always have to have the other. That's part of what American history is about, is understanding how the other and the dangerous other and the fear of the other constantly moves. And you have to frame that. And so cultures that bring us together, like hip hop, like music, they celebrate community and storytelling. It's inclusive enough that like hip hop doesn't say, you know, yes, it was started by black and Latino communities, but it's inclusive enough to really welcome and have space for everyone. But we need that's why we need to invest in culture, because that's the kind of stuff that brings people together. And it allows us to imagine a new story, a new way of conceptualizing what it means to be an American or to be in America.
To hear the full interview, listen to episode 48. It's a really important conversation. Big shout out to Tricia Wong. Another one of my favorite moments from this year has definitely been interviewing social justice leader Tamika D. Mallory, who came on the show to promote her new book called State of Emergency, How We Win in the Country We Built. Tamika really opens up to us in that interview why we need to be active in the fight for justice.
There's so many avenues that I want to go down with you, Tamika, but take us inside the book, you know, the state of emergency speech. And now, you know, you have the book in your hands. You're talking about it. You're all over the networks. It's out. It's on top of the charts. Take us inside the book for a minute.
There's a lot of good things in the book and a lot of great information. I do cover history to make sure, you know, Ella Baker once said that, you know, we have to really understand the history. It's not just knowing it, but it's understanding it. And so I think every time that we get an opportunity to talk about the history of this 400 plus year period since we were stolen from our land and brought here to a place that we've never been properly respected in and have never had equity and justice, I do go into that. But I also talk about a prescription for working together to push past these things. What's the role of each of us in the community? What is the role of the relationship that we have with the Latino community, with the African community, with the diaspora, if you will? What is the relationship there? And the foreword of my book was very intentional for me. I took the time to track down and use my relationship with Charlamagne. And then of course, thank God, Cardi B actually follows me on social media, and she and I had a number of conversations. And then I had to track down Dr. Angela Davis using my friend Philip Agnew and others. And I got both of these people to agree, icons, to agree that they would be in conversation with one another at the beginning of the book in this foreword. And for me, that was important because I wanted to set the tone that when someone picked up the book, they're automatically, doesn't matter who they are, where they come from, what their background is. They could be the janitor working in the church and the pastor. It could be the doctor. and, you know, a child on a street corner. It could be a mother and her son. It could be a young girl working in a strip club, that everybody would find themselves mm-hmm. in these pages. I really wanted to make sure that this book was one that is for all of us, that we all experience it together and that we use it as a tool mm-hmm. for how we move forward and how we actually one day receive justice and true mm-hmm. equity in America.
And I think that it's brilliant to start the book with the four words of a conversation of those two, as you say, icons. It's intergenerational. It's Angela Davis, of course, an icon from the civil rights era and with, you know, deep ideological roots, to somebody who's more connected to the streets and to young pop culture today, but who is also, I'm personally impressed by Cardi B. I mean, she's also in a way that not a lot of artists of her stature, stuck her neck out and talked and commented on politics along the way in these past 4 or 5 years.
She's not just commented. She's been behind supporting families, supporting causes. I worked with Alicia Keys, Rhapsody, and a number of other individuals to pull a group together. And we worked on a public service campaign, if you will, for Breonna Taylor, and specifically to push for Breonna's law to be passed in Louisville, Kentucky. It was legislation that was being worked on by a sister named Keturah Horan. And we worked together to ensure that this campaign would be one filled with the highest level voices. When you think about Ellen DeGeneres, Jada Pinkett, I don't even want to get in trouble for trying to name mm-hmm. all of the incredible women. It's something that I think if folks haven't seen it, they should go back and look it up. And the campaign was, do you know what happened to Breonna Taylor? Cardi was one of those that we invited to be a part of it. She got on a call and literally reshaped the whole vision in just moments. She helped pull the ideas together. She gave direction. She gave her support. And of course, she turned in her video. And that to me let me know that Cardi is much more clear about her role than many of us may think. She knows what she's doing. She understands that her music may not be role model music. She knows that she's out here twerking and doing her thing. But I have to be honest, and I've been saying it everywhere that I go because I want people to know that the reason why I chose these two individuals outside of the idea that, I wanted it to be accessible, but I also find myself being a mixture between Cardi B and Angela Davis. On any given moment, you can catch me twerking and working, right?
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Yeah.
You know, I remember Tamika's inspiring state of emergency speech that she gave after the death of George Floyd. That was around the same time Marcus and I created this moment. She really helped set the tone for the movement that followed. So this moment salutes you, Tamika D. Mallory. Thank you for everything. By the way, that's episode 55. Go check that out. Another favorite episode of mine is when we interviewed lifelong politician Margot Wallström, who helped institute the groundbreaking feminist foreign policy.
What were some of the reactions you were met with, and what were some of the challenges of conducting that feminist foreign policy?
Yeah, I felt very proud to be able to announce that I and we would pursue a feminist foreign policy in 2014. And we were the first government, and I was the first foreign minister to do so. And this was, of course, part of, you know, I have always made my agendas. When I take on a new post or a new political role, I set an agenda, because I think that if you do so, and if you sometimes stick your neck out, you will get criticized, for sure. That's part of the job, but you will also create expectations, and you set yourself a target, an objective. And this is, you know, for me, if I have those four sort of priorities, then I will have to answer to the voters after 4 years. So did you deliver on these things? And exactly what did you do? So when we did so, when I pronounced that we would have a feminist foreign policy, I could almost hear the sort of the gasping of seasoned diplomats, you know, in the foreign ministry. But I must say, if it was met with some criticism or it turned into curiosity very, very soon. And then also I presented a number of parameters by which we would work on this through all our diplomatic representation around the world. So I said, to make it concrete, this is not a slogan. This is about changing women's lives around the world, and doing so by checking on, do they enjoy the same human rights and legal rights as men and boys around the world? Do budgetary resources go to meet the needs of girls and women as well? And do they even have gender budgeting? Do they check on the results of this on women and men respectively? So we used sort of those parameters, those three R's, rights, representation, and resources, as the way to carry this out. And I think it has been an amazing opportunity also. Because why does it belong to foreign policy? Because we know that more women means more peace. If women are around a table when peace negotiations are made, more options come on the table, and the agreement will last longer. So that's what we know about this. And we cannot have sustainable peace if women are excluded.
Have you seen your example that you boldly put forth have you inspired other nations? Are there other nations today that have a feminist foreign policy?
Absolutely. Six countries so far have followed.
Wow.
So including Canada and France and Mexico and Tunisia and Luxembourg, and I think others have, at least in part, they have also taken on to call it a feminist development policy or a feminist part. So we have inspired others. We have for sure made an impression with this. And we have, of course, been consistent also when we served on the Security Council as a non-permanent member. Then we made sure that we would all the time raise our hand and ask, so where are the women? Are they there as peacekeepers? Are they mentioned in Security Council resolutions? Do they come as briefers? Are they there invited as civil society representatives, etc.?
And folks, that's episode 57. Among many things that I love about Margot, it is her ability to stand up to opposition and still manage to have civil discourse. Not always the easiest thing to do. Now, as you know, I'm an artist, so I'm gonna save the musical portion of this best of for last. So let's start with Mapé. My dear sister, friend, dope singer, rapper, and a frequent collaborator of mine. We chat with her about her hip hop origin story. So let's hear some of that.
And I mean, over the years, we've known each other for a bunch of years now. So, but we've never really talked about, I've never really gotten the timeline on like where you grew up and when, but I seem to recall that you came to Stockholm when you were in your early teenage years or something like that.
Nine or 10. So I came from Providence, okay. Rhode Island to Stockholm. I grew up, very humble beginnings. But the rich part of those humble beginnings was that I would always hear bass lines from outside. You know what I mean? Like real hip hop. Mm-hmm. I grew up in a hip hop environment, you know, like.
This is in Providence, right?
And of course you have freestyle music, like, ooh, oh, Diamond Girl, like all that Money Talks. Mm-hmm. I mean, like those songs were blasting as well, but I was fortunate to like be in the cradle of all that on the East Coast of America when people were just like walking around with Onyx t-shirts and just rhyming and buying jewelry, you know what I mean? And people still buy jewelry, but you know what I mean? It was like
golden era DJ stuff.
And I was so young, but it was my formative years. So that's what I knew. And that's was my reality. And then I often say this in interviews, like I came to Sweden and it was like the movie, The Cell, you know what I mean? It was like this layer of melancholy that laid on me. And you know, I also, you know, I was influenced by MTV as a child because I would watch TV a lot and I would see like rock videos and stuff. And all of a sudden the rock video was in my, outside my window. You know what I mean? Like, love to, like, yeah. You know, like I would call them horse girls, hästtjejer, you know what I mean? Like,
okay, yeah,
people
that
would ride horses and listen to like Pearl Jam or Nirvana and wear Nirvana t-shirts. So this was like, wow, I can chill with these folks as well. You know what I mean? Like these people exist too, but hip hop has always been like deeply rooted in my DNA, you know, without even knowing it.
I mean, I take it then. And from hearing you talk about what it was like growing up in Providence, that hip hop was just everywhere. It was just a natural part of your environment. But do you remember back then in those early days, if there was a certain album or artist that was like one of the earliest to kind of capture your attention a little more, or that you like got, like what was the first album or artist that you really got into?
I think my sister listens more albums. I was so young, but I loved LL Cool J. Like Around the Way Girl was a popular song. So, you know, just those lyrics, standing at the bus stop, sucking on a lollipop, once it gets, it's hard to make, you know what I mean? It's like those lyrics, I would always rhyme them, like even coming to Sweden and people were like, you're American, you should rhyme, like rhyme, you know, because I looked like video when I came to Sweden, I would rhyme lyrics that existed from like LL or, you know, Run DMC or, you know, just like, I remember it was like a lot of Wu-Tang back in the day as well. 36 Chambers, you know what I mean? So it was, and seeing that come to Sweden, like a couple of years later was shocking to me. Cause I never thought the hip hop vibe would ever come to Stockholm. You know, I was just like, that's long gone. And every summer when I would travel to the States and see, like, you know, music at the basketball courts or like rappers, gear that was influenced by hip hop music, I would be like, I'm never going to see this in Stockholm. But all of a sudden there was this wave of like underground battle hip hop. I don't even know how. Do you know how it came to Sweden? Like, how did people, was it like through, was it like a movement?
I think hip hop came to Sweden, like, you know, started seeping in through, you know, kids that had traveled to the States and brought records back with them, you know, probably around the same time that hip hop was really starting to happen. So, you know, the earliest accounts of like a hip hop song being played in Sweden is probably like early 80s, you know, but it, somebody had probably been to New York and, you know, been to Rock and Soul or whatever record shop at the time was selling this new, fresh and exciting music and brought it with them to Stockholm or Gothenburg and played it. But do you remember what, like, when you wrote your first, like, rap verse or when you spit your first verse?
So, you know, ending up in Tumba, Sweden, which was very, like, you know, I was the only immigrant in my school, but then I eventually...
Can we say Tumba is that New kind Jersey. Of like New Jersey or
no,
like...
it's like...
What would we say compared
Stockholm,
to...
But it's like Springfield, you know what I mean? Like, okay. You know, it's the suburb outside of the city a bit, you know what I mean? Like, Syracuse. I don't know how to explain it. New York's too big to like compare it to... Yeah. To here, but
Mount Vernon or something in the city, but far from the city, kind of. So you arrive in Tumba,
But then, you know, I would like I started going to clubs here since, you know, it wasn't that dangerous for kids to be out here as opposed to America, where you go outside, they're like, don't go out there. There's, you know, dirty old men and you can get shot. You know what I mean? You could just, you know, like that Shaheen verse. What's it called?
From
that.
I just remember his on and on.
And everyone, when he's like, all you can hear is the shells drop. An old man got shot in a parking lot in front of a building. I hang with a friend. You know what I mean? So it was
Yeah. That's from that first track, On and On.
You know, you don't go out there. I remember like dirty old men just looking at you, you know, like catcalling kids and shit. You know what I mean? So, you know, so in Sweden, it wasn't that dangerous. You would go out and go to clubs. And I was like 12 when I went to my first club. So there I met, and techno was really big, Euro techno. So we would like wear braids and like rave clothes mixed with like hip hop gear. Cause you know, that was what was in like 95, 96, you know, before like Missy P. Diddy and all that came to the table. But yeah, so basically I would go to these clubs, dances, like rave dances, and I met Cool James and the Black Teacher. They had a song called Calling Dr. Feel Good, makes you feel good, calling Dr. Feel. So I was like, oh, and they were like, you know, looking at me like, okay, does she rhyme or anything? Because I knew these rappers called Michael and Kane from Albee, which is like the hood part of Mount Vernon, so to say. So, they were like, yeah, you should start rhyming, you know. So I just wrote my first verse, and it was a really hard verse. It was like, home people just be using the scene, abusing the scene, but ain't nobody using me because I'll just steal on them. So they better have a shell on them. I don't care no more. I don't share no more. All I do is mind my own, like mowing the lawn or Sylvester Stallone. Yo. Now listen, crowd, this is Stocktown and I'm proud, but we all the same. So don't make a big flame, just like, you know what I mean? But that's other guy.
Yo.
That rhymes.
All right. First
verse. I was 12, you know, so I was very proud of that.
As a lover of hip-hop culture, it's dope to hear these kind of stories and inspiring and uplifting to dig into the roots of the global hip-hop community and to know that we can all share our love of music together. That's episode 59, peeps. Check it out. And to finish things off, I gotta say it was a real treat to review Kanye's latest album, Donda, with my friend, writer, hip-hop activist, and DJ Nathan Hammelberg.
The best verse on the entire album, that's on the actual album, I would say, to me, is the J Electronica.
I was hoping you were going to say that.
Well, I'm happy that we're in agreement on track number 17, Jesus Lord.
Yeah.
I mean, where he kind of, just in those however many bars it is, but let's guess on 16,
it's a snippet that it should have been an odyssey, but never mind, it was just a snippet we were given. Yeah,
it kind of covers all bases from start to it covers all bases from start to finish on the whole. It's like, if I only need to hear 16 bars of the whole album, those are the 16 bars. Like, if all these like release mass meetings and everything, if it was just to get J Electronica to write 16 bars, then it was worth it.
Yeah, totally. But he's also, I mean, he has some kind of Stokely Carmichael-y or Kwame Ture kind of on pointness when he spits. And I also thought of it, I mean, Kanye,
I mean, when he drops,
I never, Kanye is all over the place because it's his album, so I mean that shouldn't come as a surprise. But I mean, what we know about Electronica is that he is more, I mean,
he's a mystic.
Yeah, and the like a written testimony is was like, you know, how carbon mutates to diamond from the like geological pressure of ages. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's a reluctant rapper, but he's not a narcissistic rapper, you could say. he's not that eager.
Which really is paradoxical, because he's on the definitely most visible and well-known narcissistic rapper on the planet. On his album, you know.
To me,
J Electronica doesn't seem like that. Like, it seems to me that he doesn't even have to. He doesn't even have to rap. I mean, but he will do it when asked. But that is something. It's just the art is in his exhalation. Is in the air he breathes. So it doesn't have to be, you know, put on record and sold.
And I think also
I love when he puts it on record, because I always get uplifted from hearing it. But it's kind of like the Swedish rapper Jacke, who also has this just very
rarely just drops, and when he does, it's like he's killing it.
Yeah, it's just a natural flow where it's like it's so kind of you know, can we call it big rap energy or something? Like, he has nothing to prove. That just makes his foundation very solid. But when he drops, I never rolled the GSXR or the R6 or the Honda, but I flew my Ducati through North America like Wakanda. Earthquakes will strike this nation for what Bush did to Rwanda, what the Clintons did to Haiti, and Downing Street did to Ghana. Yeah. That's where I'm like, okay, thank you.
I think he could like sit equally well as being a minister for the Nation of Islam. Whereas, I mean, as much as I admire Ye's attempt to be kind of transparent with like emotional struggles and the loss of his mother and so on and so forth, when Electronica drops his verse, it's just like, yep. Yeah, so this is the the pure, uncut truth.
One of the mysteries with this album to me is also the title, the so clear kind of homage to his mom, but that's also what I'm missing lyrically on the album. But then again, when something is 27 tracks long, just grasping all Kanye's verses and understanding, okay, where is he going? Where is he in this?
It could be even that we're like a bit early on this. I mean, it could be that half of it has yet to sink in. But I'm thinking he's trying to kill too many stones with too many birds with one stone.
Yeah, yeah.
That he wants to make he wants to somehow, from some introspective point of view, he really wants to, address his mother. But at the same time, then he thinks it's what would be befitting to my mother. Oh, well, that would be my magnum opus. What should my magnum opus be? Oh, it must be the fattest, illest joint of all time. So I'm going to have everybody and they moms on it. And therefore he ends up with having, it feels like there's a collab or a feature on every song, which means that any focus on his mother and his loss, etc., comes sort of, it gets a bit lost on the way. And I'm also thinking with the collabos, I think he almost treats it as a way of manipulating us, the audience, into getting a call and response feeling from it. I mean, people have likened it to gospel, and I can see why or how that makes sense.
This was so fun to record, just two hip-hop heads getting to nerd out and discuss Kanye's cultural impact as well as the evolution of his sound. Go check out the full Donda review in episode 72. And by the by, no doubt in hindsight who won that competition between Drake and Kanye. And for y'all that saw the live show that both of them did at the Larry Hoover event, I rest my case, folks. Also, let us know who you'd like for me to review next. Could be a current, could be a classic. Your suggestion might just make the cut. Email us at thismomentpodcast@gmail.com. Also, follow us on Instagram at thismomentpodcast. Send us a message with a suggestion. Thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks for making this a great year together with us. Happy holidays, and we'll be back after Christmas. One love.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.